Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include Katie's American Indian Arts, Madison Jazz Society, and Ministry Healthcare. You too can help ensure the future of WPR with your business sponsorship. Find out more at wpr.org/sponsor. Support also comes from The Hostel Shop in Stevens Point, Wisconsin, helping customers rediscover the joy of cycling with recumbent trikes and bikes and 24 years of recumbent experience. More at hostelshop.com.
Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
Well, I think it's fine building jumbo planes, taking a ride on a cosmic train. I know we've come a long way, we're changing day to day, but tell me, where do the children play?
I'm Glenn Moberg. In the not-too-distant future, children will be playing on a new athletic field complex near downtown Wausau, next to the city's already up-and-running world-class curling center, on a site that was once piled high in garbage, and which today could serve as an example to other communities coping with the problem of solid waste disposal. Last month, the Wisconsin DNR gave its first ever certificate of completion to the partners involved in the cleanup of the old Holtz Krause landfill, clearing the way for ownership of the property by Marathon County without having to assume liability for any past environmental problems. It is the first time this has ever happened for a licensed municipal landfill in our state. And it required the help of both Democrats and Republicans who changed state law to make it possible. Joining us in our Wisconsin Public Radio studios today, Dave Eisenreich. He's the chairman of the Holtz Krause Steering Committee. Also, Mark Timpke, an attorney with Foley & Lardner of Milwaukee, who served as the project's environmental legal consultant, and Brad Karger, Marathon County Administrator. As always, we want to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-780-9742 if you'd like to join the conversation, if you're looking forward to having your kids, or maybe you're looking forward to playing on that athletic field. Maybe you love the world-class curling center that's already on the site. Maybe you're wondering exactly how you can change an old garbage dump into something that's so useful to the community where children can actually play on it. 1-800-780-9742, or you can put a question on our Facebook page and I will read it live on the air. Dave Eisenreich, why don't we start with you? Tell us how you got involved in this project.
Well, good morning. First of all, thank you for having us today. This project has been going on for about 20 years, and we first got involved in it when the DNR decided that the Holtz Krause landfill had to be closed. It had been closed in about 1980. They decided that it probably wasn't closed properly and had to go through that process again. And the Holtz and Krause Steering Committee was formed to work with the DNR to assist them in the proper and cost-effective closure of the site. So that's how we first got started.
And who else was on this committee with you?
Well, we had representatives from various organizations in the area. The city and the county worked with us. We had essentially all of the major companies in the area. And when we went through the process of collecting money to repair the site and to close the site, we ended up with about 1,300 organizations and individuals who had put waste into the landfill, helping us by contributing funds to repair it and close it.
Were any of these people liable for any future problems because they'd used the landfill before? I mean, did they have a self-interest in getting it cleaned up, or was this all just for the good of the community?
Well, I think there was some potential liability at the time if we were not successful in cleaning it up, but so there was a little bit of a hammer above a lot of us, but many of the organizations and businesses in the area did feel that this had some potential and kind of did it more or less voluntarily.
You're a former executive for Marathon Electric.
Yes.
You're a guy who's spent a lot of time in Wausau. Did those two things make you want to get involved in this?
Well, the short answer is yes. I mean, I believe in working to improve and better the community wherever we can and when time permits. And this was an area that obviously required, you know, a lot of time, a lot of work, and it was something that, for some reason or other, interested me at the time.
Brad Carter, what's been the county's role?
The county will be the landowner. Our role was getting the county board, or my role was getting the county board to see the benefit of the project and the long-term benefit of that to the community and understand the environmental limitations in terms of we wouldn't be responsible for the previous pollution, which was not a simple thing to understand, so that they could properly assess the risk and the benefit to the residents of Marathon County and make an informed decision.
Who's the owner now if Marathon County, you said, will be the owner?
Well, we are the owner right now.
You are the owner right now.
As part of this process, we purchased the land from a private party.
And what steps did you have to go through in order to get the support of the county board?
Dave Eisenreich and I were reflecting on this, and it seemed like it was preordained, but it wasn't. There were many points where I thought the county board could vote no. The biggest part was really creating clarity around what the risk is of environmental pollution. And it's not a simple thing where you can just say you don't have any risk. That wouldn't be true. So what is your risk? It is a very limited risk, and you have to understand a relatively complex law. The next thing was really convincing people that, or having them understand what the demand is for tournament soccer. We had a number of people who said there are plenty of soccer fields, others that said, you know, mm-hmm. I don't like soccer, and moving on, because it's a...
Did you have a split, too, with some county board members who maybe lived in Wausau and could see the need for something like this, and maybe folks who live, in some of the furthest out sections of the county who probably had to be convinced?
No. Here's what I found out. That was my assumption going in, is that if you lived in Spencer and you saw some public investment going, and there's a limited amount of county investment going into this site, that you would be less inclined to support it. But the outlying areas on the furthest part of the county actually didn't raise many questions. Most of the opposition came from supervisors in the metro area and mostly Wausau.
Why was that?
Well, I think they were more interested in it. And in the end, we had a lot of support from them. But I think that they felt, or that maybe they had a better comprehension of all the environmental stuff, and they really wanted to sift through that. And what may have been really not opposition, but feeling that they're doing their due diligence and really representing the public carefully, they asked a lot of hard questions, which would lead someone observing them to think that they're not inclined to just rubber stamp anything.
Well, it's kind of like, I guess, divining what the Supreme Court is going to do based on the questions they ask in a case. You can't always tell how they're going to vote in the end.
Right. In the end, there was overwhelming support for the project.
When are these athletic fields going to open?
They're not going to open this summer. They'll open next summer, and we'll have a big grand opening.
And this is already next to a world-class curling facility on the property.
Yes. It's going to be a fantastic site. It's going to be a destination for people. And there's going to be an environmental area where people can kayak and stuff like that and hike, also adjoining the site.
Because we've got wetlands right next to the area.
We do, and they're owned by the city.
Mark Temke, when were you and your law firm first brought into this process?
Really, Glenn, we were brought in from the beginning by the committee to back in the early 90s to address it. This was really an experiment from the early days when the site was first decided to be pursued by the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Before then, the tendency was to make these all Superfund sites, to put the stigma of being a Superfund site on the community. And there was an effort to try and change that, and this was an experiment.
An experiment back then.
A very successful one. In fact, the state at that time had the vision of trying to make this a soccer complex back in the early 90s. And the state at the time put around $4 million into this project to try and have it closed and try and close it in a way that it could be reused as a soccer facility. We weren't successful in the early days at getting that done. A lot of reasons of concerns over environmental laws, liability that Brad and Dave have talked about. But over time, we were able to realize that vision now.
What legal challenges did this pose for you?
Well, we needed to, it's really a policy issue that we needed to deal with, was that the balance between doing very expensive environmental cleanups on property that probably wouldn't happen versus trying to balance that with putting property back into reuse. They're safe, the risks are managed, and then being able to reuse them. And you need to have that balance between cost and reuse and make a policy choice. This property could sit as what we call a brown blob and have monitoring wells and be hidden behind a cemetery and a railroad, or it could be turned into a wonderful, economically viable soccer and curling complex.
Now, Mark, your law firm is in Milwaukee, but you're a Central Wisconsin guy, right?
I am. Born and raised in Shawano, and I remember driving past the cemetery many times on Grand Avenue as I traveled to tennis tournaments and did other things in Wausau.
So let's what I'd like to do right now is listen to a short news story that we put together here at Wisconsin Public Radio. When that certificate of completion was issued for the site, we'll listen to that and then come back and talk more about the Holtz-Krause cleanup. The Holtz-Krause landfill sits on 60 acres just south of downtown Wausau. The former eyesore and health hazard can now be converted into a soccer complex owned by Marathon County. Bill Duncanson is the Parks, Recreation, and Forestry Director.
It's going to contain 15 fields of various sizes, from smaller ones for the kids up to full tournament size soccer fields. They can accommodate rugby, lacrosse, field hockey.
The landfill not only had to be cleaned up, state law had to be changed before the county was willing to take ownership. Dave Eisenreich chairs a steering committee which lobbied Democrats and Republicans to change the law so new owners of licensed landfills would not be liable for old problems.
In the past, essentially, landfills were expected to be closed, monitored forever, and nothing ever done with them. With the change in the law, a new owner would not be held liable for any kind of environmental issue.
The final step comes this week when the DNR issues its certification for completion. DNR hydrologist Aaron Ensley says it's the first ever for a licensed municipal landfill.
I think the real accomplishment at this site is that you had a really good group of interested parties coming together to make this a win for the community that allowed basically this landfill to be used for a productive purpose that may not have otherwise happened.
The soccer complex will sit next to Wausau's recently completed world-class curling center. I'm Glenn Mobert for Wisconsin Public Radio News.
And again, that piece was produced a few weeks ago before the DNR issued its first ever certificate of completion for a licensed municipal landfill. If you just joined us on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio, we've got Dave Eisenreich of the Holtz-Krause Steering Committee, Marathon County Administrator Brad Karger, and also Mark Timke, an environmental lawyer who worked on the project, talking about how we were able to take a garbage dump in the middle of Wausau and turn it into an athletic field complex and a world-class curling center, and what example this could be for other communities facing similar problems. If you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or put a comment on our Facebook page, the Route 51 Facebook page. We'll read it on the air. Dave Eisenreich, as we heard from the DNR in this piece, it was really a unique situation with the entire community coming together to rescue the site.
Yeah, it was really it's been an interesting process. Obviously, it's been a long process, but I think our particular site had a lot of things going for it that maybe others didn't, and we had a lot of situations where the stars just all aligned properly. We had a number of people who were personally interested in the project and seeing something done with the site to make it productive. We had a lot of businesses and organizations that were willing to support it financially. We had a lot of people just stay with the project over the 15 or 20 years. The DNR has been...
It's a long time to have a steering committee and be involved in something, 15 or 20 years.
It's been a very long time in that regard. And we've had people turn over on the steering committee just because of that long time. But we've been fortunate enough to have people who were engaged and interested in seeing it, it work. I think having the DNR... work with us and being involved from the start, as Mark had said. Their vision at the time when we got together and were working together early on in the 90s was to do something productive with the site, not just leave it as a brownfield site that nothing was ever done.
Well, what standards had to be met in order for you to do that? We don't have anybody from the DNR here, but maybe one of you can give us an idea. Mark Timke?
Sure. We needed to be able to demonstrate that the site was protective in the sense that we had put a protective cap on top of the property to prevent infiltration of water down through it to affect the groundwater. We had to do long-term monitoring to be able to show that the levels of contaminants in the groundwater were decreasing. We had to demonstrate, I believe it was in 2011, finally, that we made a demonstration that active kind of pump and treat of the groundwater was not required. That also allowed us to free up some money to be able to do the work we did. So it's a demonstration that the site is not posing an environmental risk to the area, and that conditions are improving, and that we've taken the steps to show that.
Well, I don't want to get too far into the weeds here, but there's a big distinction here between landfills and licensed municipal landfills. Why is that an important legal distinction?
It was part of the early forms of this brownfield law that we're talking about, which is the law that gives this certificate of completion to eliminate liability. And there was a concern when this was put in the 90s that landfills weren't the type of site that maybe should be appropriate for this. It was aimed more at an industrial facility to convert it into reuse. And so there was some resistance to landfills being put into that category. We needed to address that in order to successfully transfer this property. It required a law change. And I think over time in the experience of people at the department saw that this was a viable change that could be used and could convert property to reuse.
And that law change involved the owner, in this case Marathon County, not being liable for any past environmental problems at the site. Brad Karger, why was that so important?
Well, what could happen on a site that's cleaned up to the current DNR standards, and then they change their standards, and then to clean up to that level costs another $1 million, we could have been held to the cleanup costs that to the new DNR standards, and our elected officials were not willing to assume that kind of risk with a property that they didn't own or didn't have any historic relationship with.
Well, let's say we suddenly find massive groundwater contamination. Something goes wrong at the site. Who's liable for that then? Who has to pay for the cleanup, and who, if anybody, gets sued if it's not the county?
I'll let Mark answer, but I think we could still do things as owner that could cause a problem. What we have to distinguish is things that happened in the past versus what happens going forward. So, Mark will...
So this wasn't completely risk-free for the county.
That's why it was an interesting discussion. We had to understand that we're going to own a recovered landfill site, and we have to treat it appropriately. Cannot penetrate, you know, things and release pollution, and we have to treat it on appropriate use basis.
Right, and to the extent that the law was set up to promote the reuse, and obviously the issue of past contamination has been a fear of lenders, buyers, lots of people who may be interested in buying these pieces of property but shied away because they saw, as Brad said, the significant potential for environmental liability. So we needed a law to say that if these sites are appropriately closed, that risk is not going to be imposed on a new owner. Who takes that risk? It's the state steps in and takes that risk. And if there's a future problem, say with groundwater situation, it would be DNR in the state that would step up. But the state taxpayers are also protected in a way under this law. We have an insurance program in which the Holtz-Krause paid to the state to provide that kind of insurance protection for the state.
Well, how was the law changed? What was the old law and what's the new law now that you got it changed?
Well, what we needed to do is to remove an exemption that was in the law, and the exemption said that these types of landfills could not apply and be part. They were barred from even applying for the certificate of completion. So we needed to remove that to be able to say that if we could make the environmental demonstration that these sites were appropriately closed, that the environmental contamination was appropriately managed, that that risk could be transferred to the state.
I don't get that. Why would a licensed municipal landfill not be able to do that, but other landfills could?
In a way, it was kind of a quirk of the law that it was put in that way in the 1990s. I think when the Brownfield Law was first put in, it was an iteration of experience over time. People were uncomfortable at first with this liability transfer, an exemption program. They felt the polluter should always pay. But there was a understanding that what that did is it meant property was never reused, because people were always afraid of taking property. So we needed to have an incentive to say it's clean, you can reuse this property as long as you don't do anything to harm it, and put it back into productive use. It started off as an industrial focus, and it changed over time, and finally we were able to make people comfortable that a landfill could do it.
I think it's important to also recognize that the state just doesn't take on this this liability, if you will, without a great deal of thought and study. The state excuse me, the state, and in this case the DNR, is very excuse me, are very comfortable that there's not going to be issues. And in fact, where the state has done this in the past, that is take responsibility through this insurance program, they have yet to have a claim filed against them. So they only do it when they have a very high degree of confidence that there's not going to be a problem down the road.
And in this case, we have the advantage of having roughly 20 years of groundwater monitoring. So an extensive amount of environmental data to be analyzed by DNR in their expertise to show that the groundwater conditions were, in fact, improving, that the capping of the site was having the effect we desired to have it have, and that this was a site that could be reused.
And as we have mentioned, it took a change in state law to make this happen. It required, believe it or not, Democrats and Republicans working together for the common good. When we come back, we'll talk about that part of the story. As our discussion on the Holtz-Krause landfill in downtown Wausau continues, a landfill that is being turned into an athletic complex, a world-class curling facility, first time something like that has ever happened with a licensed municipal landfill in the state of Wisconsin. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network.
Oh, I love trash, anything dirty or stingy or dusty, anything ragged or rotten or rusty. Yes, I love trash.
Thank you to the business sponsors who help support WPR programs. Businesses like D.B. Reinhardt Institute for Ethics, Access Prosthetics, and Gimme Shelter play a huge role in the success of WPR. Your business can too. More information at WPR.org/sponsor. Support also comes from Wausau's Woodson Art Museum, presenting exhibitions featuring upcycled couture fashion and fiber arts on view through June 15th. Details about how to repurpose and reimagine everyday items at lywam.org.
Brown-eyed handsome man.
Well, we're born again. There's new grass on the field. We're not talking about a baseball field here. We're talking about athletic fields, soccer fields in downtown Wausau on the former site of a garbage dump, a landfill, the Holtz Krause Landfill, which just got its first ever certificate of completion and is being turned into really quite an amazing asset for the greater community. I'm Glenn Moberg. You're listening to Route 51 Regional Talk Radio with Dave Eisenreih, the chair of the Holtz Krause Steering Committee, environmental lawyer Mark Timke, who worked on the project, and Brad Karger, the Marathon County Administrator. Brad Karger, why are we doing an athletic field there? Why don't you put a baseball diamond in?
Well, our research shows that we do have enough baseball diamonds that the real interest is in tournament soccer, and that's where a lot of our residents have said, we're traveling a lot of weekends during a year, and it's very inconvenient. We would like to invite guests to our community, have them spend some of their money, and not so much, I don't hear that much about residents talk about how much money they spend. I do hear people who sell services to them, but there really is, let's invite them to our community and see what we have here, because we have a remarkable community, and we want to welcome them here.
Is there a problem with what you can put on that site, because it is an old landfill? I mean, you know, a baseball diamond, you might have to drill down and put in the backstop and grandstands and so on.
It's remarkable what technology can do, because our lights did go in, and they were acceptable. We have lights on the tournament field. So I suppose you could do it that way, but you cannot penetrate the cap. You know, like we would still be liable for current pollution, so we want to make sure that cap is preserved. Having something that doesn't require a lot of things that go into the cap is certainly preferable.
I think if I might, before we decided on soccer as the choice for the site, we did a lot of research we talked to the county, we talked to the city, we talked to the parks department, we talked to various other organizations in town, and the consensus was that there was a need for soccer fields all in one place. It's not that we didn't have a lot of soccer fields in the area, but if the associations wanted to have a tournament, it was almost impossible because the fields were spread all over the place. The other thing is, as far as what can go on the site, the DNR would prefer not to have anything, you know, like a baseball diamond that doesn't have grass on the infield. They would like to have the grass there, and so that was another reason that we went with the soccer fields. But we did a lot of research prior to actually deciding on soccer fields as the choice.
Brad Karger, go on, Mark.
I just step in here, Glenn. Our firm does a lot of work with sports complexes, and this is something which also has an economic element to it for the community, because we find that the building these kind of sporting complexes brings people to these kinds of facilities, that not only do you use the facility, but there's an economic growth in the neighborhoods with having the support that goes with it, be it restaurants, be it travel facilities, be it hotels that could develop in those areas to support the people who are coming in. And I believe the chamber here in Wausau did an economic review and showed that this complex will bring in significant economic gain to the community. So it's not just the fact that you have those facilities, but you have also the economic benefit occurring in the community as well.
Well Brad, have we done an analysis of what the economic development is? It'd be hard to believe that you hadn't done that.
I had the Sports Authority, that's part of the Convention and Visitors Bureau, do a study, probably 18 months ago, 2 years ago, something like that, that we presented to the county board and to others. Essentially, it said, and I don't remember the exact details, but essentially it said that a weekend tournament, relatively small by soccer tournament standards, say 50 teams, could bring in or have a positive economic impact of anywhere from $500,000 to $750,000. Larger tournaments, which is what they expect to have as time goes on and they're able to build up their resume, so
right,
to speak, easily can bring in $1 million plus in a weekend. You know, you're talking about a soccer team that maybe has 10, 12, kids on it. You got mom and dad. You got brothers and sisters.
Got to stay somewhere. They got to go out to eat.
Shopping, gas, hotels, restaurants. And so the Sports Authority folks were very comfortable that their estimates were, in fact, conservative. But this should have a very positive benefit on the area.
You know, and you add to that the fact that we've got this world-class curling facility on the site. About a mile away in downtown Wausau, you have the world-class kayak competition site. Mm-hmm. We have skiing in the winter on Rib Mountain. Brad Karger, Wausau has really become a destination for athletic performances and competition of all kinds.
It has, and all of Marathon County has. It's a really a great place to play in the snow and during the summer. Unfortunately, the snow is here in the summer, too. But, really thinking about tourism in Marathon County, we're not going to have what Minocqua has, you know, so we're going to have to be about sports tourism, and I think we've really been successful in that market. Glenn, can I take a deeper look at some of this in terms of what happened early on? The Holtz-Krause Steering Committee is a coalition of major corporations that help fund the cleanup, but that didn't just emerge. Actually, John Robinson was involved in this as assemblyman, and he actually passed the first liability exemption law for this. And he was involved in putting together those corporations to do the cleanup early on. And he's involved all the way along until really the very end, where he became a DNR employee and then had some limitations of being a DNR employee both and a county board supervisor. But, you know, if I were to identify who the champions of this were that stuck with it for 30 years, John would be on that list. The other would be Dave. Sticking with it. It sounds preordained. There was no end to the frustration as this process moved on. Most people would have given up. We would have done the cleanup unless you had really had a high tolerance for, you know, we're just going to ride this to the very end. It would not have happened. Those are two names that come up mind. I know there are champions within the DNR, but I'm not actually that familiar with them. But you have to have community leaders who are willing to stick with a project for 20 to 30 years, or it didn't happen.
Well, Dave Eisenreich, one of the things that you had to do is change state law, and you were able to successfully get Democrats and Republicans to work together on that. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that was a very interesting process, particularly given the timing of it, because that was at the time where the Democrats and Republicans essentially were at each other's throat and had a difficult time agreeing.
You mean it's been different in other times?
It was harder back then, even, I think. But
I would say you're right, Dave. I remember those times.
But interestingly enough, we approached Donna Seidel at the time. She was our representative, the Democratic side. Jerry Petrowski on the Republican side. The name escapes me now for the Republican Senate, but from our area. But all of these folks.
Well, Russ Decker was the state senator back then.
No, Russ was already.
He was that would have been Pam Galloway.
Galloway. And all of these folks recognized the potential, recognized the value, and they co-signed and sponsored the bill, the legislation in Madison. That ultimately was passed.
Well, you're right. That was a very volatile time. That was right after Act 10 was passed,
correct.
And we had those demonstrations going on in Madison. And boy, it's amazing you could get anything done.
Well, it was interesting. The day that we had to present our case to the legislative committee hearing in Madison, the hearing. Facility was just packed, and I thought they were there because of us and were there to oppose it. It turned out that same committee was hearing mining legislation comments, and so we were fortunate to be on first and then get out of there for that. But all along the way, the state legislature, both sides of the aisle, were very supportive of us, and without that, frankly, this would not have gone forward.
In fact, we were able to have the work done so that when the bill was introduced, it actually flew through committee, and I believe it was 11 to 12 days from introduction to signing or to passage by the legislature. It was very fast. It was a very fast track. little vignette of that hearing that Dave mentioned was as we were filing out through all of the people coming in for the mining incident, for the mining hearing, I hear, "Hi, Dad," coming through a voice, and my daughter, who was attending UW-Madison at the time, greeted me.
Now, what was she doing there?
I guess she was not for our legislative hearing. I think it was for the other one.
So now that this has been done, now that state law has been changed, are other municipalities going to follow Wausau and Marathon County suit? Are we going to see this duplicated in other areas around the state, Mark Temke?
We would hope. Outside of the legal work, I'm also been a long-term member of the Brownfield Study Group, trying to work closely with the DNR and the Wisconsin legislature to foster brownfield law and to have it used by other communities. We had expected that there would be other municipalities who would be jumping in right away. I think it's probably the financial side, which is a little bit more difficult. We are seeing some interest by private industry who have similar licensed sites, ash sites, and other types of sites where redevelopment can occur and be productively developed into other facilities. So hopeful that this will generate interest. And I think the economic side of this, once you realize the benefits the city of Wausau and the county of Marathon is getting from this, other communities might step back and look at this and say, this is something we should do.
And Brad Karger, what are those economic benefits? Have you tried to do some analysis of what it'll mean for tax revenue and all of the other things that will go along with it?
We have on a number of different fronts. Actually, our committees have really talked about what is it that Marathon County and the city of Wausau metro area can do to attract and retain young talent. And we found that, you know, a lot of things are out there. First of all, you have to have jobs and second jobs, and we can do so much on that. But the biggest piece is the young professionals want a place where they can work and play, as they don't want to just work. They don't want just a job. They want a community that they can thrive in, and that this can be an important piece of that, as well as the other community facilities, athletic facilities and things that people enjoy. They have access to outdoor recreation, all different kinds of things. So from our analysis, based on our community handprint, this is an important positioning of Marathon County as an attractor of talent. We've also calculated the impact on sales tax, and I'll tell you, the Sports Authority does the analysis that they do on sports venues all over the place, and it's $1 bumps another dollar. I've got a lot of people pretty cynical about that analysis. But we do know that if they buy things, they pay sales tax, and we get a half a percent sales
half
tax.
Cent, yeah.
I don't know if it's clear. Maybe I should clarify this. The construction is being done by the corporate donors to the cleanup. The county is just inheriting a fully constructed facility. We'll be responsible for maintenance costs, but that half a percent, if we get anything near approaching what we have in terms of dollars spent here in our community, will more than offset those maintenance costs.
And look at the development that's already going on there. You've got Quick Trip opening a new gas station right at that Kent Street entrance to the property. Obviously, they think there's going to be more traffic going back and forth.
Right. I think you're right. I think you'll see adjacent development. And that really wasn't, you know, the most developed area. I live just up on top of the hill there, and I know that some of that neighborhood, you know, has gotten older, and the Kmart has been gone, and you're seeing now you're starting to see some sprouts of some new development as a result of some increased traffic, and really I think an area that was lost on the map, right in the dead center of the metro area, is now really being discovered.
Brad Karger, Marathon County Administrator, Mark Temke, Environmental Attorney, and Dave Eisenreich, the Chair of the Holtz-Krause Steering Committee. We're talking about the Holtz-Krause landfill, a garbage dump in downtown Wausau that was capped, cleaned up, and is now about to be turned into an athletic field complex, perhaps serving as an example for other communities around the state of Wisconsin. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio, 1-800-780-9742. If you'd like to join the conversation or leave a message on our Route 51 Facebook page, that's 1-800-780-9742.
Visit American City. city. You will find it very pretty. Just two things of which you must beware. Don't drink the water and don't breathe the air. Pollution, pollution, we got smog and sewage and mud. Turn on your tap and get hot and cold running crud.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include Stevens Point Area Co-op, Peninsula Music Festival, and Import Auto Clinic. You too can help ensure the future of WPR with your business sponsorship. Find out more at WPR.org/sponsor. Support also comes from the Wisconsin Lakes Partnership, bringing their 36th annual statewide convention back to Stevens Point April 24th through 26th, with hands-on workshops, national experts, and ideas for protecting our legacy of lakes. More at WisconsinLakes.org.
Now on that limb, there was a branch, the prettiest little branch that you ever did see. Now the branch on the limb, and the limb on the tree, and the tree in the hole, and the hole in the ground, and the green grass grew all around, and the green grass grew all around.
And the green grass will be growing all around the old Holtz-Krause landfill site in downtown Wausau. We are talking about the successful reclamation of that site and the fact that it is being turned into an athletic field complex and a world-class curling facility, which is already up and running on the site. The challenges of getting that done, the change in state law that had to happen, the cooperation, the people who've pulled together, and the example that this may show for the rest of Wisconsin. 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Moberg. Our guests are Brad Carter, County Administrator, Mark Timke, an environmental attorney who worked on the project, and Dave Eisenreich, the chair of the Holtz-Krause Committee. Gentlemen, there was a newspaper story recently indicating that a number of homeowners, about 20 of them, got letters from the DNR telling them that because groundwater contamination that exceeds standards are still at the site, as property owners, they can't do some things. They can't drill wells on their property. Some of them were told that they can't build anything on the properties without DNR approval, and they can't excavate the land. Some of these homeowners were really far from the property. Anybody want to comment on why they would get those letters and what that might mean about groundwater contamination?
Well, let me start, and then I think Mark, yeah. Mark can chime in. The DNR has, first of all, the reason I think it was 14 homeowners got the letter was that the groundwater from the landfill does flow in that direction, first of all. So it's just by DNR regulation, they have to notify people. Unfortunately, the letter that the homeowners received was very confusing at best, and difficult to understand by even those of us who have been involved in this for a long time. At the end of the day, there was a lot of misconceptions about the letter responsibility of these homeowners. The only restriction that the homeowners have is they cannot drill a well. That's not really a new restriction on them, because the city of Wausau has had an ordinance for decades that essentially says you can't drill a well. So that really isn't a change. The other items that you mentioned, you can't plow your land, you can't do this, was intended for the county and the people who are actually owning the landfill itself. Unfortunately, the DNR tried to write a letter
that applied to everybody.
Applied to everybody and confused everybody in the process.
The DNR letter in this case, there were some revisions to the cleanup rules that a number of us were involved in, and one of the outgrowths of this was developing these kinds of letters. The good purpose in terms of trying to notify people of situations, but the letter was trying to fit all situations. It became kind of a form letter, and it wasn't well tailored to the site. I've had discussions with people at DNR, and the letters will change in the future. They will become more tailored. They will not be so generic, and they will be in an understandable form for people.
But is it true that these homeowners, if they sell their property, have to notify anybody who might buy their property, that there's this restriction on them? And if that's the case, doesn't that hurt their property values?
No, there is a under the real estate forms that that are required to be used now, there is a disclosure of situations, and so people would need to disclose that this situation exists. In addition, there is a statewide database that people can research by computer, by going to Google Earth, looking at properties, and they will see that there's a groundwater restriction here that you can't put a well on the property, which is nothing new, as Dave said. You couldn't put a well on the property 20 years ago. The other part with respect to our experience with brownfields has not been finding that there's these kind of issues with respect to property values. There's lots of brownfields in urban areas. This is not new. This is not different in terms of what we see.
Now, there is some contamination of the groundwater, correct? There's some vinyl chloride and benzene in it. Is it at such a low level that it really is of no concern?
Right. We wouldn't, Glenn, we wouldn't have gotten the approval from DNR without all the extensive monitoring that's been done at the site and their technical assessment that the contaminants are naturally attenuating and that there's really no exposure risk to people from this water. It's located 60 feet or so down under the ground in an area that's not being used for potable water sources, and there are municipal restrictions on using it. So the people are getting water from the Wausau municipal water system, not from drilling a well on this property. And if you consider that from industrial areas, you wouldn't be able to redevelop any industrial areas in any municipalities if you always held it up because of low levels of groundwater.
You know, it strikes me that things have changed so much during our lifetimes, gentlemen. When we were kids, people used to throw anything in the garbage, you know, old paint cans, chemicals, sometimes, you know, even dumping stuff right down the municipal sewers. What a change, Brad Carger, in the way we view waste and how we're trying to deal with it.
It is, and you know, a lot of people don't know our own history here in Marathon County and the city of Wausau, but Oak Island Park was a landfill. Actually, it was a dump. It wasn't really a landfill.
Right on the river.
Yeah, right on the river, and Memorial Park was the same. And I think there were other parks that are now reused for that purpose. A long time ago, they were stopped operation, but they weren't capped, they weren't monitored, they weren't any of the protections that you see in this, and now they're reused as really vibrant public facilities.
Dave Eisenreich, are you hopeful that the example of Holtz Krause will be something that other communities can use around the state of Wisconsin?
Oh, very much so. I mean, we put a lot of effort in and had to just because we were the first, but there are so many opportunities around the state for other municipalities to do this kind of thing. I won't say that it's easy or it's quick, but it has a lot of potential to take non-productive land and make it into something useful.
You know, we're down to our last minute here. Any final thoughts on this?
I would say that this was one of the unique experiences I've had in dealing with environmental policy and environmental law efforts, because it took time, but we were able to change law. We were able to work productively with people, and it was people who all had a shared vision and worked together as a team. And you don't see that very often, where people bring their individual talents, and the sum of their talents is much more than just their individual parts to make this happen.
Brad Carger, we're going to have a big party on that site next year.
I can't wait for it. I think this is a real celebration of a lot of people's efforts, and I think there will be a lot of great benefit to our residents for a very long period of time on that site.
Thank you, gentlemen, very much for just a great hour here on Route 51.
I'm going to live where the green grass grows. Watch my corn pop up in rows. Every night be tucked in close to you. Raise our kids where the good Lord's blessed. Point our rocking chairs towards the west. Plant our dreams where the peaceful river flows. Where the green grass grows.
We want to thank today's guests, Dave Eisenreich, the chairman of the Holtz-Krause Steering Committee, Mark Timke, an attorney with Foley & Lardner of Milwaukee and the environmental attorney who worked on the project, and Brad Karger, Marathon County Administrator. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Jane Ritger. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Special music today by the cast of Sesame Street, Tom Lear, Pete Seeger, Cat Stevens, and Tim McGraw. Whoa, where the green grass grows. Next week on Route 51, we take Route 51 on the road to the UW-Stevens Point campus, which will be holding its annual Wisconsin Lakes Partnership Convention, bringing together hundreds of scientists, naturalists, and advocates concerned about the future of our state's freshwater resources. Remember to follow us on Facebook, and if you missed some of this broadcast, a reminder that Route 51 is repeated in its entirety every Friday evening at 7 on 90.9 FM Wausau and can be downloaded at wpr.org/route51. Thanks again for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin. Until next week, we're heading out of town.